Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna from immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is January 26th, 2012. This is a community conference call that is being recorded. So if you don't want your voice to be recorded and made publicly available or your identity to be kept confidential, please act accordingly. By participating in this call, we have not agreed to represent you as lawyers, and you have not agreed to become our clients. So this call does not create attorney-client privilege or relationship. And in addition to that, let me just switch off the tone 1 second. Our answers are based upon the information that we have. We cannot guarantee that we have understood all the facts in the short time that we have. So please take this call in the spirit in which it is offered as a matter of trying to help as many people as we can. That said, I have a call. Somebody called my office and they wanted to talk with me, and they had urgent situation. I had no time this afternoon, so I said just come in the call. Sir, you are first. Area code 734. Go ahead, please.
I'm assuming that's me. So I have a situation. I'm working for a company for the last 5.5 years, and they have applied for my green card. I have an approved I-140 with a priority date of February 2008. When my priority date became current, unfortunately, they announced a restructuring and my position was let go of. I still have about a month more to before my end date comes in effect. Currently, I have two job offers from Company B and Company C, and both are willing to do H-1 transfer on premium processing, but only Company B is willing to do my green card immediately. And my understanding is that because I have approved 140 from my existing company, I should get a visa transfer for another 3 years, and I was hoping to clarify this assumption from you, and also wondering if I can apply for H-1 transfer both with Company B and Company C. And does the fact that Company B is willing to transfer my H-1 and also do green card processing immediately hold any benefit from an immigration standpoint to me?
Yes, I understood the four questions that you have in mind. As long as your current company, Company A, does not revoke your I-140, you can definitely get a three-year H-1 extension for B and C. And the smart thing is, of course, to have both B and C apply for you, as long as you're not signing any contracts that's going to come back and be a problem for you. So that answers, I think, two of your questions. Now, about which company is better, of course, the company that is willing to start your green card right away is better. That makes more sense from any perspective. Okay. You had one more question that I missed. Can you repeat that for me? I think I got.
Yes. Under some situation, let's say if my green card, God forbid, if I don't get 3 year H-1 transfer for some reason, if I just get it for 1 year, or maybe if there is an RFC in processing the H-1, and in the meantime the current company cancels 140, then can I use the fact that Company B is applying for my green card and use that to extend H-1s?
Only after 1 year.
Only after 1 year of Company B applying for green card?
That is correct. The way it works is you can get H-1 extension only if one of the two things happens. Either your green card has been pending 1 year, or your green card and then the I-1, your labor cert and then PERM has been approved. I'm sorry, what am I saying? If your PERM and your I-140 has been approved. So let's say we file your PERM today, and in 1 year's time, the PERM is still pending or I-140 is pending, not approved. You're entitled to your one-year extension because your green card was started a year ago. Clear?
Okay, yeah, but H-1 transfer, so for example, let's look at Company B scenario. Company B applies for my H-1 transfers and gets some RFE, and in the meantime, they also apply for my green card processing. Now, when the existing company cancels the 140, can they... Company B has applied for my green card hold any significance?
No.
And the last question was, when Company B and Company C both are applying, which I-94 will come into effect? Can I just decide to switch between B or C or join one company over the other per my willingness, or it's more about a time sequence of approval? Because I'm assuming both approvals will come with I-94, isn't that so?
Yes. You would have your choice of joining either company.
So the date on I-94 will be based on?
It doesn't matter. The bottom line is if you have two H-1s approval and you are maintaining status, you have a choice to join in either one of the companies.
Oh, so they're going to approve change of approval and also give me change of status to H, because they're going to apply for extension, a change of status as well as H1 approval, right? So can USCIS do change of status for both the H1s from B and C?
That is what they do. They don't call it change of status. They call it extension of stay.
So in both cases, I'll get I-94s and they'll be based off of the same date. Like they'll have the same date and different I-94 numbers from B and C.
They will have probably same or similar dates. Yes.
Okay. So I as of now, I shouldn't really pick one over the other because my biggest dilemma is I was going to ask one company to not apply and just say I'm not interested and just go with one company. Although the company which is doing my green card is more like a staffing firm, and I feel a little unsafe with them. And the company which is not doing a green card is a huge insurance company, so they'll take their time to do the green card, but I feel safer with them when they transfer my visa.
Okay, so what is the question?
So the question is the safest bet to go for both the approvals at the same time?
I don't see why not. As long as you're not signing any contracts to the contrary.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks. It shouldn't really affect the transfer process, right? Because two approvals are pending with the USCIS.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. There was one more person that had been referred or asked to call by my office. Somebody from my office told you to call into the conference today. If you are on the phone, press *5. The person who was asked by my office to call into the conference call. *5. Press *5 on your phone. Okay, you're not here. I will get started on the conference call questions. First question is from Jack Ellis. Jack Ellis says, I'm from India. I-45 is approved. But for my wife, we received an RFE for 485. You see, what happens is when somebody was born in 1984 and their birth certificate or birth was registered in 2007, U.S. government does not accept that. They don't accept that. They want you then to treat it as though the birth certificate is not available. So unless the birth is registered contemporaneously with the event of birth, about the same time, your birth certificate will not be acceptable, most likely. What they will say is, go get a certificate of non-availability from the municipal corporation of the city where she was born, the local government. Let them tell you in writing that there is no birth certificate available before 2007. Okay? Once they give you that non-availability certificate, then you get affidavits from two people, typically mom and dad, who say that this is the date she was born. Along with that, typically I would also give things like school records, passport picture, passport copy showing the date of birth, whatever else you can think of as secondary evidence. It's not needed, but I submit it anyway. Okay? So the reason behind the query, you're right, it's because the year of registration of the birth was 2007. Next question you have is, do we need to provide affidavit, etc., all of that I've given. Also, do we need to have witness signatures in affidavit? Well, under the U.S. laws, affidavits don't even need to be notarized. not for federal cases. So if you don't have a copy of the of an affidavit that we have put out in the public domain, send me an email. You can send it to help@immigration.com. I will send you a sample copy of an affidavit of birth that you can use, and that just has to be put on plain paper. No witnesses required, just the person who is swearing the affidavit. And you don't need to take it to a notary public also. Okay? Let's see. For question number two of marriage certificate. Marriage certificate, we got married in 2007. And marriage, everything is in English. Not sure why they're requesting marriage certificate again. You may want to give two affidavits of marriage as well, people who attended, give some pictures of the wedding, a copy of your marriage card if you have it. I'm not sure why they're asking for this, but you can go ahead and supplement the evidence anyway. I don't see any problem with that. Do we need to notarize photocopies of date of birth and marriage certificate? No. I can't get information from my lawyer. You don't need to notarize copies of whatever documents you're sending, but you should have the originals in your possession because USCIS can ask for the originals if they so choose. Next question is Sanchalanam, who wants to know, is it possible to work remotely for a U.S. employer from Canada? And the answer is yes. When you work from another country, you just need permission in that country to work. If the work is ultimately ending up in USA or you are logging into a computer in USA, that is no violation of U.S. laws, unless you're working with some restricted technologies like encryption, etc. There is absolutely no problem where you work from. Your story is that you've got your Canadian permanent residence. In the meantime, I-140 has been approved under EB3. If the employer lets me work 2 years from Canada, what will happen to my H-1B status? You don't really need to have an H-1B status to maintain your green card. If you continue to work with that employer, it becomes a very good argument that the fact that you're still working with that employer, that you still have a job with them. So you don't necessarily have to have an H-1. Okay? Next question, Hari MP, I-140 and 485 concurrent processing. Okay, applied for 140, 485, June 2007 priority date porting. Applied I-140. Would converting I-140 to premium processing speed up 485? It may, only to the extent that, I think it should. That would be my guess. Because if the priority date is current and the I-140 has not been approved, I don't think they would do anything with the 485 until the I-140 is approved, other than just issuing you EAD and AP. So, but if the I-140 is approved, they will move on the 485. I think so. If a person with 2008 priority date applies before me, whose 485 will be processed first if both PDs are current for long? Well, the answer is, as far as I know, roughly, the 485s are processed in the order the government received them. Once the priority date is current, whether you are a 2006 filer or a 2012 filer, if the PD is current, then whoever files first gets processed roughly first. But this is not a guarantee. The government can go up and down. And the courts have actually said that there is no right to first in, first out in cases like this. Number two, how can I make sure my I-485 is processed in case if my new I-140 don't show the old PD? I guess what you're saying is if my old priority date is not showing on my new I-140, what happens? What can I do to make sure that I'm covered? But the good news is these days USCIS is actually doing system sweeps, from what I understand, on a monthly basis. So they themselves look out for these things. If you are entitled to an earlier priority date, even if it was not captured during the I-140 approval for the second case, they will automatically give you the earliest priority date to which you are entitled. How can you make sure it doesn't happen? You really cannot. But what you can do is, Once the new I-140 is approved, if it does not bear the old priority date, you can open a service request and make sure that it's put in the record, and hopefully that should take care of it, okay? EL2, NOLA, ideal time to get married while applying for a green card. Ideal time to get married while applying for a green card is when your 485 has not yet been approved. If the 485 is approved, you would have to apply for her separately. But if you are married before the 485 is approved, then she still gets her green card through you. If she's in USA, she gets it at the same time. If she's out in your home country, I'm assuming, let's say, India, then she does a process called following to join, and you can Google that, following to join. Basically, what that does, it should be there in our forums also and on our website also. So the idea is that you've got your green card approval. USCIS then sends information to the consular side through the National Visa Center, New Hampshire, and then your wife is interviewed in her home country by the consulate, and she gets her green card maybe in a few months after you get yours. Okay, I'm trying to get married December this year, but if we can register our marriage in the U.S. earlier if needed. See, don't think of marriage as registration. You know, I would say if you are going to register, then you should basically live together as husband and wife and treat that as a genuine marriage. Now, I may qualify for EB-1 filing, so my main concern is, like I said, if I file under EB-2, it should take 2 years. Okay. Yeah, my suggestion would be to go ahead and get married at the earliest so that there is no question that she will get her green card with you. That's the way I would handle it. Okay? Sai for green card. Sai has been asking us questions for quite some time, so we know him for a while. Sai, I think you have asked the same questions twice, but I could be wrong. Okay, so what happened was, this is a long story. There's no way I can go over all of it. Basically, the idea is somewhere along the line, your 485 was denied, and company A, labor applied, got RFC, got denied, did MTR, MTR denied, appeal filed, final appeal denied. I-485 applied, denied. Well, you know, I am concerned that, have you talked with your lawyers about unlawful presence? Because it looks like you have an I-140 denial going back to June 2007. So the question is, are you unlawfully present or do you have H-1 visa? Because if you're unlawfully present, then you have a very serious issue. But if you're not unlawfully present, then Company C is preparing an MTR and a new H-1. This is a very dangerous situation. I just don't know enough facts. But I can try to answer your questions as generally as I can. But do remember, I don't know all the facts of your case. What are my options? I don't know because I don't know all the details of your case. I would need to look at your H-1 paperwork. You already have a lawyer. Work with them if you are comfortable with them or get yourself another lawyer. This is not something I can do in a quick call, but I'll do my best to answer general questions. Do I have to apply for an MTR for my dependents also or just me? There is a split of opinions. A lot of people feel that if you just apply for the principal, the derivatives should automatically be reinstated. I think the better policy, a better practice is to apply for everybody, or at the very least, when you apply for the principal, to list the names of all the derivatives in the prayer saying, we also want these cases reopened. So if you do that expressly, I think you have a good chance of succeeding even on one MTR. But typically, I check with the clients, and I tend to file MTRs for all of them. And again, if I were you, I would have my lawyer check up with USCIS if they want you to do it differently. Again, as practitioners, we often want to make sure we call the government and at least know the obvious answers that they give out before we give you any suggestions, because I know it's a lot of money to apply for 4, 5, 6 people an MTR. So we want to make sure that it's okay to apply just one and name everybody in it, and that should work. Do I acquire any illegal status even if I apply for MTR? That's what I'm concerned about. You see, filing of an appeal or filing of an MTR gives you no status. Filing of an appeal or filing of an MTR gives you absolutely no status. You continue to be in unlawful presence or out of status, whichever one is your case. My daughter is a freshman in college. Would it be better to go for F1? She should. I mean, the problem is if you have filed a 485, getting an F1 becomes iffy, but I think she should. If I would like to go for H1B, do I have to go to a native country or can I go to a neighboring country? Typically, if you have been out of status even for one day, neighboring countries can refuse to accept your visa. As a practical matter, they haven't been doing that. As a practical matter, they have been entertaining applications even if you have been out of status. But if you go with what the letter of the law says, they shouldn't be doing it. Okay? So take your pick. What I would do is you should perhaps go to the neighboring country, but be prepared to fly out to India if they decline your application there. That's the way I would handle it. Okay? Next question. Question regarding perm audit, new perm filing, and job change. Wife and I are both working on H-1B. I'm completing 6 years in May this year. Perm applied under EB-3. Audit came. Audit answered. Okay. My case should have been answered by now, but there's no update. Can we request expediting? No, you can send an email. Your lawyer or your employer can, once the case goes over the normal time, but there's no way to expedite. The current employer filed under EB-3, you have 5+ years of experience. Is it possible to upgrade EB-2? No, not at this stage. You have to start all over again. To start new case and port to previous, but no, that's not the way it works. Unless this case is approved, you cannot really port the priority date. Actually, this perm should be approved, then the I-140 should be approved. Only then the priority date becomes portable. Before that, the PD can, there is no PD that can be ported. Okay? What are my options if I change my employer? Is it possible to have my priority date from current employer only? See, like I said, priority date is established for porting only if your perm is approved and after the perm, your I-140 is approved. Okay? So, you have to think about something else, though. What if you just changed employers and went for EB-2? And the way that would be done is, think about it. This is my suggestion. I mean, this is what makes sense to me. Right now, you have about 6 months, not even 6 months, 4 or 5 months of H-1B left. Okay? This is a good time for the second employer, if they are so kind, they can start processing your green card. Okay? Let them start you processing your green card. Remember, you have to time this accordingly. You have to time it so that you have enough time left, about 1 year, after the new employer files your green card. So you should move over to the new employer when you still have about 1 year left on your H-1. So when you just recently got an extension, then you move over. So in the meantime, continue working with the old employer. Keep getting your H-1 extensions based upon their filing, because your perm was applied in November 2010, so you're already entitled to a seventh-year extension. Keep in mind also, you can apply for an H-1 extension 6 months ahead of time. Okay? So let me give you an example. So you went ahead and got a one-year extension with your current employer, and now you are good till, is it May? Yes, May 2014. Okay? New employer is working on your green card. They got your new case green card filed in July of 2013. That means in July of 2014, you will become eligible for H-1 extensions through the new employer. keep this date filed away in your mind. Now, coming back to this employer, the old employer, you are good till May of next year. What you do is, around 6 months before May of next year, which is about December, you file for an H-1 extension based upon this employer's I-140 with the new employer. Okay. Now what happens is, you are good till 2015. May. On the other hand, with the old employer, you would be with the new employer who filed in July 2013, you'll be good till 2014. So that means you are well covered up till December. So therefore, what you should do is at that point you can move your H-1s because now you no longer need the old employer. I'm making it a little complicated. I hope I'm saying the dates right, but you can figure this out. The idea is you move over only after you become eligible for H-1 extensions through the new employer. And that timing is 1 year after the POM filing. So that means you could move somewhere in at about a six-month mark because if you have enough H-1 left, then you know that you can get further extensions based upon the new filing. That's probably how I would do it. My wife's employer is filing her POM in EB-2. Is it possible to change job after I-140 approval? One thing you have to remember, first of all, as I told you, unless the I-140 is approved, there is no priority date. So if she or you change your jobs before POM approval, you lose everything. If you change your jobs before I-140 approval, you still lose everything. If you change your jobs after I-140 approval, but the old employer revokes your I-140, you lose your priority date. But you keep the H-1 that USCIS has already given you. Normally, they don't take that away. You may not be able to do any transfers or extensions after that, but they will normally not take away what they have already given you. Okay? I trust that answers your questions. Next question, Yash Raj, 31, EB-1 category. Look, as long as you are qualified for EB-1, which you appear to be, you came on H-1 since Jan 2006. Before that, you were in India with the same company from Feb through Jan 2006. Then you were on B-1 with the same company again. Before, it looks like you have enough time with the same company. It looks like you should be eligible for EB-1, and I would go directly for EB-1. Look up the law just to make sure that there are no issues with the gap that has been since you came on H-1. If there are no legal issues with that, I would go ahead and file EB-1 directly. I don't personally see any big need for an L-1A because your H-1 maxes out in April. Well, maybe an L-1A is possible. I don't even know. I think for L-1A, you need at least 6 months of H-1 left before you can do 1 year transfer. There's a rule on this also. I think you can only do the seventh year L-1 extension if you have not exhausted more than 4, 5.5 years of your H-1. Something like that. There's a rule like that. Double check that. L-1 may not be an option, but directly going for an EB-1 is not a bad idea because you file I-485 and you're allowed to stay even after April because your I-485 is pending. And within 90 days of when you file the 485 with the EB-1 application, you'll get your EAD. So that may be the best option for you. Next question, Raji MG. My priority date, EB-2, is current with employer A, currently working for employer B. H-1B is good till 2015. When do I need to apply for I-485? Can I wait for a year if the dates are still current? You can. There is no law that says you cannot wait to file an I-485. And, you know, the priority date being current gives you the option of filing a 485, but not an obligation. It's an option, okay? But remember one thing. USCIS can question, especially in the case of a future employer, why are you taking so long to file your 485? Is there really a job there? Because if there's a permanent job there, you would be in a hurry to join, and the employer would want you to join as well. So just keep the common sense in mind. Otherwise, there's no law that says you can't wait. If I apply for 485 with EAD and AP, do I have to start working? No. EAD gives you the option to work wherever you want. It does not require you to work for employer A who sponsored you or anybody else. You still can remain on H-1. Merely issuance of an EAD does not change your H-1 status. When I receive EAD or when I physically receive, okay. You said previously that if... Oh, so your question was, do I start working for employer A when I receive EAD or when I get my green card? And the answer is only after you get your I-485 approval. And even there, like I said, your next question says, if the 485 has been pending more than 180 days, there's no requirement to join that employer. And the answer is yes, that is true. So can the 485 be delayed? Example, incomplete documentation, etc. I don't like playing games like that, but I guess theoretically that is possible. If I never work for company A, then will there be a problem? See, I see a bigger problem here. I think filing a 485, if you have no intention of joining them, can be questionable because basically you are telling the government that you have the intention to join the employer. So as long as you have the intention and then later on your circumstances change or you prefer not to go work with them, that's okay. But at the time you file the 485, you should have the intention of joining. If I never work for company A, will that be a problem? See, I think people who never work for future employers, if they are qualified for AC-21, I tell them to maintain enough documentation showing that the two jobs are similar, etc., so that if at the naturalization stage they are questioned, they have a good enough explanation that these were similar jobs. If me and my spouse get the green card from employer A, my spouse also has an application pending for EB-2. Does it invalidate that? Yes, of course. You can only have green card through one source. You can't have multiple green cards. You can have green card applications pending, but once one is approved, all others are gone. Suppose we use AP for travel, H-1B is still valid. That is correct. What do they write on I-94? I don't know what they write on I-94. I don't think they write anything specific, just the regular I-94. If you're in India, I-45 gets rejected. It also invalidates the AP, correct. Do we need fresh stamping of H-1B? Yes, you do. If you want to re-enter after the AP denial, you have no choice. You have to go get H-1B visa stamping. Is it true that if an employer revokes the I-140, we cannot carry our PD forward? The answer is yes, that is true. Now, considering some posts above and the risk involved with denial, etc., should we just use this option? One, me and my spouse continue on our respective H-1Bs, apply for fresh labor and I-140 after my spouse graduates with his training and he gets a new job, and hoping he can still use his PD. You know, I think, Raji, you need to do an appointment with me or with your own lawyers because there are several issues here that I am a little confused about. I mean, I thought your spouse had a straight and straight job because it looks like your spouse also has a job that is either with a future employer or there's some question about it. I hate to answer questions in the dark and give you wrong information. What you want to do is set up a call either with his lawyers, your own lawyers, or us, but we need to go over your whole case step by step, not like this. Next question, Bob Basic 2002. Incorrect information on form. Your green card got approved 2 years ago, and you found that there was something incorrect on the zip code on your employer information. I don't think it's that big a problem. I don't think it should ever become an issue. And I don't think there's a way to correct it. unless you want to surrender your green card, surrender your I-140, surrender your perm, and go back and file a new one, there's no way to correct it, as far as I know. Personally, in my opinion, it should not be an issue. This next question appears to be the same as Sai. I am not sure. This question is from Servant, but it looks like Sai. Approved in September. Yep, it looks like the same question, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to skip this one because it does look like it's size questions. The last question is from Huna, who got green card, came to U.S. on marriage base, through which I got my green card, got arrested for selling counterfeit bags, handbags. The judge decreased it to 3 misdemeanors. Well, sir, here is what I recommend. It is the problem with criminal convictions and their consequences for immigration is that this area of the law involves several things that are not easy to understand. First of all, what you need to do is, in my opinion, get yourself a lawyer locally where you are who does deportation cases and who is familiar with the area of criminal convictions and their implications in law. Okay, what happens is, first thing they have to evaluate is, are you eligible for petty offense exception? Petty offense exception, which means if you are convicted of only one misdemeanor, and the actual sentence imposed was less than 180 days, then there is no issue at all. A single conviction. Now, you have 3 convictions. Is it, you have to look at the language of the charge and of the conviction. Are these 3 arising from the same incident or are the 3 different incidents? Then they have to look at moral turpitude issue. Not all crimes are by themselves cause for deportation. Only the listed crimes and the crimes that involve moral turpitude are. So the lawyers have to look at the local statutes and see how Board of Immigration Appeals has interpreted them. So there's a whole lot of work involved here that I really cannot comment about, and what you need to do is get yourself a local lawyer. Okay? I'm going to open the questions from people. Guys, anybody has any question, press *5. Let's take questions about what has been posted so far. *5, follow-up questions. *5. Okay, 2, 4. I'll start with the people who logged in first. Area code 480, go ahead, please.
Yeah, actually, regarding this birth certificate, if I'm not, is this possibility to get affidavit from Government of India like that? She is from Delhi, like Government of India.
You don't need an affidavit. You don't need an affidavit. You just need a letter from them.
So will they issue it if I don't get it?
Yeah, they do. They do issue it. Actually, funny thing is, I have seen all sorts of letters. Some of them are just on plain paper with municipal stamp seal on it. Some of them, I've even seen handwritten. What they do is, in the smaller cities, I've seen them pull out the form for the birth certificate and sign it, seal it, and then handwrite birth certificate not available.
Okay, so we can get it. And
so there's all kinds of format. Yeah.
Oh. So do you have any specific format if I send an email to help@immigration.com?
I don't. Okay. I just told you I've seen so many different formats. It is totally up to the local government how they want to write it.
Okay. And the 2007 one which was issued, it is English version, but it has some field in Hindi also, like name is in Hindi, answer is in English, but name is written as a naam also, field name. So do we need to get translation for that also if we are able to get affidavit or not?
You shouldn't have to. You should just attach a notation saying that the certificate is bilingual. It is in both English and Hindi languages.
Okay, so that only I can attach it by writing on one white paper by my own. And you mentioned that attach other document. Her passport has a name issue. Like in India, her first name is written as a full name, basically. There is no last name. And in the U.S., they change. They need last name, so they copied it old first name.
Okay,
and put
then
it in
then, then hang on to it. There is no need to bring that into picture because really you don't need that. But anything
okay,
else you
fine.
Have, school certificate, ration card, anything that you can show.
Yeah, 10th certificate is there. So I'll
get
an affidavit from India along with this 2007 English version and an affidavit from parents and 10th mark sheet.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rajiv. Generally, we get the affidavit. If we don't get from government, then still we can submit remaining thing, basically.
You have to get a letter from the government. Otherwise, they will not accept your affidavits.
Oh, so we will get it basically from government immediately. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll figure it out how.
You should.
I'll figure it out how. Thanks, Rajiv. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. Next question is area code 513. Go ahead, please. 513.
Hello, sir. This is Sharat.
My
question was in there in question number 9, but I didn't have an account, so you know I posted it through my friend.
That's all right.
So this is the last two paragraphs in question number 9.
What is the question? Go ahead, remind me.
The question is basically I'm currently on a H-1B cap exempt from a cap exempt employer that expires this June, but the future H-1B is not from a cap-exempt employer. So I'm trying to figure out what to do in July, August, and September before the new H-1B gets approved. That's the first part of the question. And I was actually told by an immigration attorney that, you know, you can do an H-1 extension for 3 months and start working for the new employer. Is that true, or are there risks involved in that?
I don't think you can. But,
okay.
You know, law is full of surprises. People may have figured out angles that I haven't thought of. Personally, I don't think that is correct, no.
Okay, so you suggest that you should probably wait for 3 months and then start with this employer.
Looks like the right thing to do to me, yes, sir.
Okay, so with the cap-exempt employer, though, you can start in July?
With the cap-exempt employer, you can start any time, as soon as the case is approved or as soon as the receipt is obtained, actually. If you're maintaining H-1 status, then you can start working as soon as receipt is obtained.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's it. You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. Just one second, guys. Okay. Last question from this set of people. Area code 904. Go ahead, please. Area code 904.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. My husband is on H-1B, and we are on H-4.
All right.
Apparently, we had filed for the green card from Company A. The perm got approved, but the I-140 got rejected, as well as the I-140 got rejected. And then we filed from Company B, the labor and the I-140, and that got approved. In the meantime, we got a RFE on the old I-485 from Company A that provided some more documents, and we provided a request for interfiling. And this case was pending since 3 years. In the meantime, my husband never used the EAT or AP, but we had traveled back to India on AP. Now, are we being the dependents out of status?
Okay, I'm confused. First of all, did your husband maintain his H-1 and you your H-4?
Yes, he did.
In other words, he's been continuing to work on H-1, did not use his EAT.
No, not at all. He never used
and
EAD.
And you continue to stay on H-4. You did not use your EAD.
No, I continue to stay on H-4 and never used EAD, but just used the AP to travel India.
Okay, that's not a problem. In my opinion, you are still on H-1, H-4, no problem.
No problem. So,
nope.
Sure. Now, the H-1 is going to expire on January 2013. But for the safe side, the lawyer has suggested to do the amended H-1 so that I could get the H-4 extension and the correct I-94.
Your I-94 got messed up when you entered? Hello?
When I entered, they took my I-94 from H-4 and gave me a new I-94 in the passports and having a stamp of parolee.
Okay. I don't think that should be a problem. I think it's a good idea, even if you kept the parolee stamp, it's not a big deal. I certainly like the idea of having a current I-94. The fact of the matter is that this is a practical loophole in USCIS's own procedures. Even though they say that if you have an H1-H4 combo and you travel on AP, we still consider you to be on H1-H4. However, when they issue you the I-94, they mess up. They issue you an I-94 like you're coming in only as on an advanced parole. Technically, they should be issuing you an I-94, which is just normal. Okay? So, but in any case, that's the way it is. I don't think that's a bad idea. They want to do an amendment and extend your H-4. Sure, go for it. Couldn't hurt.
Oh, okay. But is it advisable to the amended H-1 when we apply after the visa expires in January 2000 for the extension during that time? What is more advisable?
As early as possible, I would say.
All right. Okay. Great. Thank
Good
you.
Luck to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Much.
Bye-bye. Okay. Area code 201, go ahead, please.
Hey, Raju.
Hello.
Hey, Raju, this is regarding the question regarding perm audit and the job change, which you explained, you took time off to explain.
Sure.
I have some questions like, if I join another company and they start my perm, as you said, like I should ask another company to start my perm as soon as possible.
Sure.
If they do that, will it have any impact on my current perm process that's going on with current employer?
Not at all.
Unless it gets approved, like from the second employer, right? Or
even
if it gets approved,
it has no effect.
Oh, okay. And another question is like, once we get our perm and I-140 approved, is it necessary, like, we need to join that another employer immediately, or we should,
I answered that question at quite some length, I think.
Okay.
And the answer is not right away, but in a few months, you should be joining. But if the 485 was pending 180 days, then you don't have to join them at all, if you can get a similar job somewhere else.
Okay, that's it. Thanks, Raju.
Good luck, sir. Bye-bye. Area code 502, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. I had question number 8 regarding the EB1 category.
Sure.
You said something about a six-month clause. How can, I confirm that?
There is something. Your lawyer should be able to look it up. I'm pretty sure it's under 8 CFR 214.2, I think. They would know. There's nothing, no magic here. They can look up the regulations. I think there's a regulation somewhere that says you cannot file for L1A 7th year when you are about to run out of your 6 years of H1. You've got to do it a certain period beforehand. Some very artificial rule, doesn't make much sense, but it's there in the book somewhere.
Because I read it on some forum also, this thing that you're mentioning, but I asked my lawyer and my lawyer is saying, no, we can file. That's why I wanted to see where I can exactly find the verbiage so I can show it to my lawyer.
Are you at a computer right now?
Yeah.
Go to uscis.gov.
Okay.
uscis.gov. Tell me when you're there.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. You see the green border on the top, forms, news, resources, green border on the top?
Yeah, I see, news, resources, laws, outreach.
Click on laws.
Okay.
Okay. Now, here, this is where everything that you need is. You're going to have to mess around a little bit.
Okay.
But on the left-hand side, see that 8 CFR?
That
8 CFR means Code of Federal Regulations, Volume 8. Volume 8 applies to immigration. Okay.
Okay.
So you read that and read under that section 214.2.
Okay.
In there, it's a very long section. 214
okay.
deals with all the non-immigrant visas. Here's the fun stuff.
Okay.
If you deal with, if you read subsection A, that's A visa. Subsection B is B visa. Subsection F is student visa.
Okay.
Okay. That's where you get the names, F visa, A visa, B visa, C visa. They come from
okay.
the statute that gets translated into the regulation. Read that. And then also read below that, let's see, where is the adjudicator's field manual? It should be in here somewhere. Below that, about fifth entry, immigration handbooks, manuals, and guidance.
Okay.
Click on that.
Okay.
And look at the middle of the page on the right-hand side, adjudicator's field manual.
Okay.
This is the manual that USCIS uses internally to decide their own cases. Good place to read.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. And see, because the reason I was asking is I have around two and a half, three months left on my H1. So if I do I-140 on EB1 directly, it may or may not get approved, which means I might have to go back and come back in, right?
Mm-hmm. The problem is, I don't know what you're talking about, go back and come back in. If you're not entitled to file the H1, you have to go back anyway. Yeah.
I'm saying if I am not able to, if I don't qualify for the L1A, then I directly go for EB1.
Let me stop you for a second. Do you know that you can file an L1A even when the EB1 is pending?
Right. No, but because of the six-month clause, I cannot do the L1A, right, as you mentioned. Which
I don't know for sure, but I have in the back of my head there's something.
Yeah.
See,
I read that
lawyer,
on some forum also.
As a lawyer,
so.
We are always checking the law. Double checking.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm assuming, say I am not eligible, there is that six-month rule, then my if I do my EB1 directly, my I-140 may or may not get approved in the next 2.5 or whatever months. So I am,
sure.
Then will have to go back out.
No, because you'll be filing I-140, 45 together, no? So while they are pending, you're allowed to stay in USA. You also get work authorization.
Can you tell me a little bit about this? Because I thought my I-140 will be applied, that will get approved, and
I
can...
It's called concurrent filing. EB1 people can file concurrently. They file I-140 and 45 together.
And then that means, even though it is just applied for, I can...
You get your EAD. Even though it is still applied for, you still get your EAD.
So I have to wait for the EAD to come at least. Is that it before my H-1B
expires?
Well,
if you apply for an EB-1 within the next week or two, your EAD should arrive within 90 days. But in the meantime, you are good till April anyway. So you continue working on your H-1. Then if there is a 3-4-day gap, 10-day gap, great, no problem, take a vacation. Then the EAD comes, start working again.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck. Area code 404. I have one more call left after that, guys.
Hello, Rajivji.
Haan ji, hello.
Hello, Rajivji. This is Sai for GC.
Yes, Sai. How are you, old friend?
I'm in problem now again.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Talk to your lawyers. Figure out all the details. Unlawful presence hai ki nahi hai? That is the main thing that is concerning me, Sai. I don't know.
Yeah, I was joined late your call because the only reason HR people has called me, so I went there, and now they say that they can't able to file the MTR. They only file my H1. So I'm really worried because only just 5 months back I joined on EAD. Till now, these 11 years I've been maintaining H1.
Just stay on the phone. I'll spend 5-10 minutes with you after I'm finished with all my calls. I have one more call to do.
And then we'll stop
recording, and then only you and I will talk. Okay, just one second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay, last call, area code 718. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Rajivji, I have a following question regarding the H4 status, which I was talking to you.
Ji.
The amended H1B solution is, you said it's advisable. Now, will this affect the green card process of
no.
Person? Because
no, not at all. Absolutely
all right.
No problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Guys, good talking with all of you. I will hang up. Oh, there is still one more question. Anybody has any questions, you can raise your hands now before I hang up. Okay. Sai, I'll stay with you, okay? Just
yeah, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
I don't think anybody has any other questions. Oh, there's just one more question. Oh, they keep coming in and out. Let me just ask them anyway. Area code 920, you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a small question.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Thanks for your time and help, Rajiv.
Absolutely.
Actually, we filed for labor on EB2 on May 31st, 2010, and it was picked for audit on July 2010.
Okay.
And I completed my 6 years on my H1 on July 2011, mm-hmm. And I got a H1 approval for 1 year on pending labor approval. And as of today, I did not receive any approval on my labor.
Okay.
And the EBT is going to be current very soon.
Okay.
So what is your advice so that I will not miss these current dates?
I don't think you can do anything. I don't think you can hurry the Department of Labor along. There's no way to do that.
Okay. Or else, do you suggest if I go and file another labor from a different employer?
You can. That's never a problem. As long as you have good faith, sure, go for it.
Okay.
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 Good luck, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I'm going to stop recording the call now.